Thank you for being here. I know it's Wednesday. It's the last set of sessions, so it's good to see everyone. So I'm here to present some findings, hot off the press findings, in regards to analyses we completed that look at the iSmile program in Iowa. And before I get started, I want to acknowledge one of our co-investigators, Betsy Momini, there is in the back. And so she was able to be here today, so thank you, Betsy. But there are some team members that were not able to be here, Lloyd Mansell, Scott Lindgren, Sam Zinner and Kyle Steinman, and this really was a good example of a group effort here to better understand access to dental care for kids with autism. As Scott mentioned, or as like Scott, I don't have any relationships to disclose. So in terms of background, so we know that children with special health care needs encounter tremendous barriers to dental care, as well as health care and other types of factors that promote health. Kids with autism spectrum disorders in particular face tremendous barriers. Now, we know that kids with special health care needs, as a general group, are at increased risk for poor oral health. Now, when we think about children with autism spectrum disorders, there are some additional factors that put them at increased risk. And really, when I talk to dental students about why it is that kids with autism encounter these tremendous barriers, a lot of it has to do with the fact that there are cognitive barriers that make behaviors difficult. So when we think about the behaviors implicated in poor oral health outcomes, three come to mind: diet. We also think about access to fluoride as well as oral hygiene, and then dental care use or visits to the dentist. And what we're going to focus on in this presentation is dental visits. Now, we know that Medicaid offers comprehensive dental care services, including preventive as well as restorative care for kids who are eligible, and that Medicaid is federally mandated to provide these dental care services to children. However, we know, although that there have been some improvements over the last 10 years in terms of dental care use, that utilization still is much lower when compared to children who are privately insured, and that children with special health care needs in particular continue to have high levels of unmet needs, despite the fact that they may be utilizing at higher rates than children without special health care needs. Now I'm going to step back a little bit and talk a little bit about Medicaid program remedies. So when we think about what Medicaid programs have tried to do in terms of addressing these access problems, three programs come to mind. The Access to Baby and Child Dentistry Program in Washington State, the Into the Mouth of Babes Program in North Carolina, and then the iSmile program in Iowa. And we're going to focus on iSmile today. But really what these programs have in common is that they're community-based, family-centered care coordination programs for young children. We know that Medicaid families have a difficult time bringing their kids into a dentist. We know that there are a lot of dentists out there who don't want to see Medicaid kids. And so essentially what these programs have in common is that they're care coordination programs to ensure that the most vulnerable children in Medicaid are able to see a dentist regularly. Now, the iSmile program in particular is one of the newer programs when we think about Medicaid remedy type programs. And it's a care coordination program coordinated by dental hygienists who serve as iSmile coordinators at the community level. And what they do is they help to identify kids who are at high risk and then connect these kids to dental offices. So we're really going to focus on the iSmile program here. So when we look at dental care use across the three states that have had these remedy programs, we can see here that utilization rates are relatively high compared to national rates for Medicaid-enrolled young children. So for instance, when we look here, the blue bars represent kids under the age of three, and we're looking here at the proportion of kids under the age of three in Medicaid who utilize any dental care in a given year. And we can see here these blue bars, even though they are lower than we'd like them to see, Washington, North Carolina, and Iowa are some of the leading states in terms of getting these young kids into the dentist. We can see here by the red bars that similarly, that higher or that relatively high rates of kids between the ages of three and five utilize dental care in these three states. Now, if you looked at national rates, utilization for kids under the age of three oftentimes hovers at about 3 or 4%, and then about half the rate for children between the ages of 3 and 5. So it appears, given these remedy programs that exist, that they seem to be doing something for the intended populations. Now, you know, when I think about these programs, about these general programs, I like to think about unintended benefits as well as unintended consequences. And really, today's presentation is a case study to look at whether or not there are some unintended benefits or consequences of these remedy programs. Now, two things that I think about are spillover effects as well as crowd out. Now, spillover effects really is this notion that we have these general programs for all kids in Medicaid. So for instance, ABCD focuses on kids under the age of 6. It is targeted by age, but beyond that, subgroups are not targeted. So, you know, one of the things I'm interested in is looking at whether non-targeted individuals can actually benefit from these programs. So an example of this would be, for instance, a young child under the age of 6 in Washington State who's enrolled in ABCD. Perhaps older siblings might benefit, and this could be a spillover effect or an unintended benefit of the ABCD program. Crowd out is one of the unintended possible consequences of these general programs. And when we think about crowd out, the fundamental causes theory comes into mind. And it's this notion that these general programs that target high-risk populations, that these programs may skim off the top, meaning that those people, those individuals in the best position to be able to benefit from these programs will benefit, leaving everyone else behind, with the unintended consequence of widening disparities. Now, we don't have a lot of empirical data to support the fundamental causes theory or widening disparities in oral health, but certainly in medical care outcomes as well as other areas of research, there is evidence that general programs actually can lead to widening disparities, which is a concern from a public health perspective. So really, this really, I think, reinforces the importance of evaluating existing programs to evaluate them. We want to know whether they work or not. More importantly, we want to be able to be in a position to reformulate these programs as needed. So it could be that we can continue down the path we're on right now and continue with broad programs, but we also may need to look at the possibility of targeting vulnerable subgroups within these large programs that are most at risk for disparities. So with that, we tested three hypotheses with the study. So we looked at children with ASD or autism spectrum disorders. We hypothesized that they would be less likely to have dental homes. We also looked at the hypothesis that children with autism would be less likely to utilize preventive dental care. And then particularly within the iSmile program, and actually all these hypotheses are based on Iowa data, over time we hypothesized that there'd be increased ASD-related disparities in dental care use. I'm going to go briefly over our methods. Our paper was actually just published a couple of days ago, so if you want to get some details, this paper is available online through the American Journal of Preventive Medicine. Our study population focused on children between the ages of 3 and 17 in the Iowa Medicaid program. We looked at 9 cohorts of data spanning from 2003 through 2011, and we focused on children in Medicaid who were newly enrolled and who were enrolled for 11 or 12 months in a given cohort year. We used log linear regression models, and we estimated rate ratios. So this is kind of our conceptual model here, along with some of the time periods we're going to be looking at these hypotheses. So our main independent variable is ASD status, whether a child was identified with autism spectrum disorders or not, and we use ICD-9 codes for that. Our first outcome was a dental home measure, yes or no, whether or not they had a dental home, and this was measured using CDT codes, whether they had a comprehensive exam plus a periodic exam within the calendar year or 2 periodic exams. And then we also looked at preventive dental care use using the CDT codes listed here. We also analyzed our data over time to really get a sense for what iSmile was doing for kids with autism longitudinally, and we split the years into 3 time periods. So iSmile pre-implementation, iSmile initial implementation, and then iSmile maturation. And so we'll be able to look at these trends longitudinally. So a result, so across the nine cohorts, we had about 30,000 children in total. The mean age was about 10 years. And we were split evenly, males and females, about 50% males, 50% females. Most of the children in our data, the majority of children, were white. We had about 20% that were non-white, and about a third of the kids were missing race data. Consistent with the published literature, the prevalence of autism spectrum disorders was at about 1 or 2%, so that was in line with national studies. So when we look at our two main outcomes, so whether a child had a dental home in a particular year or whether they utilized preventive dental care, overall, across the 9 years, the dental home rate was about 8%. So about 8% of the kids in our study were getting at least two exams or preventive visits in a given year. And then when we broaden the definition to look at all preventive dental care, about 45% of kids were utilizing any kind of preventive care. And this would be sealants, fluoride varnish, care that obviously is geared toward prevention. So in terms of hypothesis one here, so we were testing whether children with ASDs would be less likely to have dental homes. Across the three periods, pre-implementation, implementation, and maturation, what we found was that there was no significant difference between kids with autism versus kids without across those three periods. And then overall, there was no difference. So when we combined all the data, there was no difference. So we found, you know, over the time period, over the 9 years of data that we looked at, that there was no difference in dental home rates for children by ASD status. And these are adjusted rate ratios, so we did adjust for confounders. In terms of hypothesis two, children with ASD would be less likely to utilize preventive care. We found no differences in the pre-implementation as well as the implementation phases of iSmile. However, both overall and during the maturation stages, we found that children with ASDs were less likely, significantly less likely, to utilize preventive dental care. And then hypothesis three, we're looking at these time trends over those three time periods. We found no evidence in any kind of decreasing or increasing trends in dental care use by ASD status over the 9 years. So a few limitations with our study. The first is that our ASD identification methods assume diagnostic and coding accuracy. However, our prevalence rate of autism was in line with national prevalence rates, so we're less concerned about this as a limitation. Our operationalization of dental home, we understand that it is restrictive and does not necessarily measure quality. So we're using, you know, two visits in any given year. So we know that our operationalization of our dental home concept is restrictive. It is in line with previous studies in the way that dental home has been operationalized in the past, but we do understand there are some limitations there. We also recognize the fact that we may need additional years of data to look at these trends over time, that we may actually not have enough data to really get a sense for the longitudinal impact of programs like iSmile on the broader Medicaid population. And also the recognition, and this ties back to my initial point about health behaviors. We know that dental visits, while they're important, they're not necessarily sufficient in improving oral health outcomes without attention paid to diet as well as access to hygiene and fluoride. So we know that dental visits are part of the solution. They're not the only solution. So we have some exciting next steps here. So I've divided these up into clinical, research, and policy next steps. So in terms of a clinical next step, one of the things we'd really love to do is to measure outcomes associated with dental homes. This idea that, you know, we may not see a difference in dental home rates for kids with autism versus kids without, but there may be some residual unmet need related disparities. And so we'd love to add a clinical piece and look at these questions prospectively. In terms of research, I think there's plenty of room in the literature to do more dental home research. The dental home literature is actually pretty scant, and so I think there's a need really to look at these issues as to what a dental home actually means, and then whether or not each of those components of dental homes really are being met. And I think this idea that there is a little more literature available in the medical home literature, and so really, you know, mirroring what's going on in medicine and trying to get a sense for whether kids in Medicaid are getting the types of dental homes that really will help to improve outcomes, I think is an important next step. Looking at broader populations, so we've really focused on kids with autism kind of as a case study in kind of the most extreme situations. What are these programs doing for these kids? But I think that there also is a need to look at these questions more broadly, as well as the need to evaluate other programs like ABCD and Into the Mouth of Babes to see if there are some cross-state differences in how these programs work. And then the policy relevance of all of this work. I think there's a need to disseminate findings to state Medicaid programs. Oftentimes these programs are initiated and implemented and not evaluated. And that's a really big public health problem. And this is something that I talk to first year dental students about. I think we all have good hearts. I think policymakers have the best of intentions. But a lot of times we don't know whether or not programs are working as intended. And I think this idea of unintended benefits as well as consequences is something that as a public health community, we really need to pay more attention to. Why is that even important? I think it really will help us to garner resources to modify existing programs and maybe develop new programs. And without those data, especially in this this current environment of fiscal issues across states, this idea that data are going to help drive innovative changes in the future, I think is something that we can take advantage of by doing this. So in conclusion, we found no difference in dental home rates by ASD status. We also found that children with ASDs were less likely to utilize preventive care, especially during the most recent period of iSmile maturation. And we found no evidence of ASD-related disparities in dental care use over time with the data that we looked at. Again, I'd like to acknowledge my co-investigators and the Iowa Department of Human Services, as well as the Iowa University of Iowa Public Policy Center for giving us access to these data. This study was funded by a HRSA Secondary Data Analysis grant, as well as an NIDCR grant. And we'd also like to thank Children's Hospital for funding this study. And with that, we'll open it up for questions and discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.